This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Ruhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
I call for peace and unity among Zimbabweans. We should remain united, remain cognizant of the fact that without unity, we cannot make much progress. There would be division, quarreling, fighting, violence.
That's Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe appealing to veterans of the nation's historical liberation struggle for new unity in the nation. Details next.
Also, to save the lives of people crossing the Mediterranean, the Red Cross is launching its first search and rescue ship today. And South Sudanese musicians have released a song to call for peace in their conflict-ridden nation.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, President Robert Mugabe is appealing for unity in Zimbabwe and an end to protests against his government, which he says led to violence. Sebastian Mumfu has more from Harare.
The 92-year-old leader made the appeal Monday at an event to commemorate veterans of Zimbabwe's liberation war at the country's national shrine in Harare.
I call for peace and unity among Zimbabweans. We should remain united, remain cognizant of the fact that without unity, we cannot make much progress. There would be division, quarreling, fighting, violence, and that is why things like protests don't pay, because usually the end up being violent protests.
The veterans of Zimbabwe's liberation war, which ended with the country's independence in 1980, have traditionally been a key bastion of support for Mugabe. But the ruling ZANU-PF party recently expelled four leading war veterans after they called Mugabe dictatorial. Mugabe is dealing with a wave of opposition to his 36-year rule in the form of public protests. Zimbabwe's chronic economic woes have intensified in the wake of drought and a severe cash shortage that has held up salaries for civil servants. This week, more protests are expected against the country's introduction of import restrictions. Monday, Mugabe ruled out lifting the restrictions, saying they are meant to protect Zimbabwean industries that are struggling to compete with South African manufactured goods. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Tension is mounting in Italy as migrants are becoming frustrated with border restrictions. Over the weekend, 200 migrants who apparently were fed up with being blocked at the Italian-French border town of Ventimiglia jumped into the sea and swam to France. French officials immediately returned the migrants to Italy. In another tense incident, media reports say a migrant support group turned violent against police officers. The protesters were said to be armed with knives. Six people were arrested and an Italian police officer died of a heart attack. Reporter Josephine McKenna is in Rome following the migrant situation. She spoke with me about the latest developments.
There's been a lot of tension on the border between Italy and France in a small town known as Ventimiglia, and several hundred immigrants have been camping in this town. There's limited accommodation, so some of them have been out in the streets. This tension has been building up, and on Friday, almost 200 immigrants jumped into the sea and literally swam into France before being sent back to Italy. And there were chaotic scenes, not only as the migrants plunged into the sea, but some great tension with the police. Police used tear gas to try and force the migrants back, and officers arrested several members of a group known as No Borders. This is a support network fighting the exclusion of migrants and trying to support the migrants as they make their way to France. And one Italian policeman actually died. He suffered a heart attack during the chaos. So tensions very high. Police used tear gas, and some of the members of this support group were actually hooded, and Italian media said they were actually carrying knives and bats. So there's concern that this might escalate and that we may see some violence as the tension increases.
We have not had reports of this type of violence before. And I know the Interior Minister is also concerned in saying that he does not want this to become another Calais. So how is Italy responding?
Italy has increased police. They've sent reinforcements to the area, and the Interior Minister, Angelino Alfano, is very concerned. He doesn't want to see this become another Calais, where we have that settlement there known as the jungle, where migrants are literally trapped. They're stopped from making that perilous journey from Europe to the UK. France, Switzerland and Austria are adamant they want to control their borders. There's increased reinforcements at this border point between Italy and France. And so the Italians are determined to not be blackmailed or pushed or forced to allow these migrants to do whatever they want and cross borders without any kind of checks at all.
Why are the migrants trying to cross the borders this way forcibly?
Well, as we know, many immigrants who make the crossing from North Africa, from Libya or from Egypt, come in through Italy and they make their way up north looking to reach other countries, whether it's Sweden or Germany or France. Some of the people from West Africa have immigrants in France and they're looking to meet up with their relatives and join them there. So many people don't register in Italy. They want to use Italy as a transit point to get to these other countries. As we know, that's becoming more difficult and they're being blocked and tensions increasing at the border. Yesterday, there was talk of another protest happening that was cancelled because of the police presence and concern that they didn't want to provoke further conflict. But it is a very tense situation there. It's really on that border of France, and we're just waiting to see what might unfold there. But there is a temporary shelter for immigrants in the town of Ventimiglia, but it's only for 360 people. The town council and the mayor are concerned that the town really isn't coping with the influx of migrants that they're seeing there.
And again, these migrants are basically coming from Africa?
Most of the migrants that are gathering in that area seem to be coming from sub-Saharan Africa. I haven't had a breakdown today, but generally in the past, what we found is that they have been from sub-Saharan Africa in that border area. As I said, the minister doesn't want to see these numbers grow out of control. He says that they're doing everything possible to save immigrants in the Mediterranean. And he really feels that the future of Europe is being played out on the border here between Italy and France, saying that the No Border activists and the Italian authorities are really in a very tense situation. And he believes that the Italian government is managing this situation with maximum efficiency in what he calls a genuine emergency regarding immigration.
That was Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
The Red Cross is launching its first search and rescue ship today in an effort to save the lives of people crossing the Mediterranean in search of refugee and safety in Europe. The responder will patrol the central Mediterranean route between North Africa and Italy, where more than 3,000 migrants have drowned this year. The Italian Red Cross, with support from the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent, or IFRC, is partnering with independent charity Migrant Offshore Aid, or MOAS, in the joint mission. El Hadji Assi, IFRC Secretary General, says far too many children, women and men are drowning in the Mediterranean as they try to reach Europe. He adds that this vessel will save lives and alleviate human suffering. The responder is expected to rescue at least 1,100 people every month.
President Obama authorized U.S. airstrikes to help the UN-backed Libyan government of National Accord make a strategic advance to uproot the Islamic State from its stronghold in the coastal city of Sirte. But President Obama and terrorism experts acknowledge they need to counter the terrorist threat with more than military forces. They need a strategy to deal with its ideology of hatred. Senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi has details.
Libya's pro-government forces have announced the beginning of a new and final offensive to liberate the Islamic State stronghold of Sirte. Commanders of the pro-government forces said in a statement that international forces supporting their military advance launched 4 airstrikes on Saturday night, targeting Islamic State sites in the city. The bombings were authorized by U.S. President Barack Obama, after recommendations from top Pentagon officials.
At the request of Libya's government of national accord, we are conducting strikes in support of government-aligned forces as they fight to retake Sirte from ISIL, and we will continue to support the government's efforts to secure their country.
The fall of Sirte, located 450 kilometers east of the Libyan capital Tripoli, would be a major blow to the Islamic State. President Obama's announcement to his National Security Council last week adds to a series of setbacks for ISIL.
ISIL has not had a major successful offensive operation in either Syria or Iraq in a full year. Even ISIL's leaders know they're going to keep losing. In their message to followers, they're increasingly acknowledging that they may lose Mosul and Raqqa. And ISIL is right, they will lose them.
But even if the terrorist group is defeated militarily, President Obama said its ideology could produce another terrorist group. That's why President Obama said there needs to be a strategy to counter the ideology online and also deal with social, economic, and political factors that help fuel violent extremism. Ambassador Alberto Fernandez, former director of the U.S. State Department Center for Strategic Counterterrorism Communications, argues that there is a need to view the problem of the Islamic State as a political problem with a media dimension, not the other way around. He says it takes a network to fight a network.
It takes a network to fight a network, and still, despite some efforts, despite some baby steps in that direction, we still lack the volume necessary to at least be able to compete in this space. Volume has value. And the Islamic State, either itself or with its networks, still has the advantage in numbers. And there is value in an echo chamber. It takes a life of its own.
Ambassador Fernandez concludes that countering the hatred message of the so-called Islamic State needs multifaceted content similar to the multifaceted content that the Islamic State produces. This could include sarcasm, fact-based approaches, ideological approaches, and most importantly, should address the core reasons behind radicalism, especially socioeconomic and governance problems. Mohammed El-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. South African military enthusiast Alan Coleman boasts one of the biggest private collections of war-related material in the world, from swords used in the Napoleonic Wars in Europe in the early 1800s to British machine guns used in the Second World War. Some of Coleman's pieces relate to Africa's many conflicts, from Zulu spears to bullets from the Mau Mau insurgency in 1950s colonial Kenya. For VOA, Darren Taylor takes us to Coleman's shop in Johannesburg.
Music from the Second World War era greets visitors to the war store in Rosebank, Johannesburg. The space is a kaleidoscope of battlefield uniforms, military badges, helmets belonging to dead tank commanders, and soldiers' torn, muddied love letters from World War I trenches. But Alan Coleman specializes in war material from Africa. He has deactivated rifles from South African troops who fought Cuban-supported Angolan forces in the late 1970s. In some of Coleman's rare footage, a Cuban fighter jet takes off to attack a South African base. Coleman holds a tattered, stained, light brown hat. It once belonged to a fighter for the Southwest Africa People's Organization, SWAPO. A South African infantryman shot him dead during an insurgency in what's now Namibia in the mid-1980s.
It's a Russian made, but then it was used by SWAPO. It's obviously been in combat because it's got a hole. We're not sure if this is blood or some sort of brain matter, possibly.
But not all of Coleman's items are from combat.
What we've got over here is from the Boer War. It's actually from the concentration camps where the South African Boers were put into camps by the British. This is an original doll that was made in the camps for the Boer children, and it's made out of material with a painted face.
The British fought the Boers in South Africa in the early 1900s. In the following song from the conflict, an Afrikaner band celebrates the legendary Boer general, Christiaan de Wet. Some of Coleman's favourite material was given to him by South Africans who fought with the legendary British mercenary Mad Mike Hoare in the mid-1960s to overthrow the Congolese government.
These items here are from that actual action. So we've got a bag here, and all the stuff in here was either captured flags and the guy's personal stuff. There's some photographs of him in the Congo, in his gear. So this sort of stuff is very well sought after because this is the real soldier of fortune stuff.
Through 66 and 7, they fought the Congo War.
The South African mercenaries were immortalized in Warren Zevon's classic song, Roland, the Headless Thompson Gunner, always on the War Store's playlist. People from all over the world bring Coleman war-related items.
They'll have it in their cupboards from their grandparents, from generations before. They don't know what it is, and then we assess it for them. We even had a guy that came in the one time with a Victoria Cross. He had it in his drawer from his grandfather in the, from the Boer War. When I told him the value of it, he fell over backwards. We got him over R1 million for that item.
With money like this at play, Coleman's collection is protected by a sophisticated security system.
Yes, we've got everything. Everything that can possibly be used, we have it.
He sells to private collectors around the globe, but maintains his quest for the objects of conflict has another motive.
The important part here is getting the history out of the woodwork into the collector's hands. The collectors pay for it, so therefore they're going to look after it.
Coleman owns a lot of memorabilia from the Second World War, with Britain's Prime Minister at the time, Winston Churchill, a big presence in his shop.
The Battle of Britain is about to begin. Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization.
Coleman points to a grey uniform. On its collar, the black lightning bolts of Germany's infamous SS squad.
We've got Third Reich stuff, Nazi stuff here, and we get a lot of the Jewish clients coming to us and say, how can you sell this stuff? But the fact is, if we don't sell it and keep it alive, it's going to be forgotten. We have Jewish clients who actually buy the Nazi stuff to keep it alive so that people can remember.
Coleman says it's fascinating to interact with war veterans.
The other day we had a guy that was 96 years old. He served in World War II. He was up in North Africa and then he went to Italy. Just speaking to the guys, they're living history. In 10 years' time, they're all going to be gone.
He says he sometimes gets unexpected visitors, including men who served with the German SS on the Russian front. They, like others, come to tell him their stories. Coleman travels the world almost non-stop in search of rare pieces for a collection he knows he'll never complete and doesn't want to either. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Calling themselves the Anataban Movement, several South Sudanese musicians have released a song to call for peace in their conflict-ridden nation. The artists say the song is only part of their campaign to end the violence in South Sudan. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig reports.
Dedicated to all South Sudanese and the people who lost a family member in this useless war, a group of South Sudanese musicians, artists, and activists recently released a song and music video called Anataban. In Arabic, it means I am tired. Being tired of the fighting that has ravaged their country is the primary motivation for the initiative, says singer and peace activist Manasseh Mathiang.
Nobody's benefiting. Every South Sudanese right now is suffering because of this war. So this is a voice of the entire population of South Sudan. It's either we are dying of starvation, we are dying of disease, or we are dying of bullets. We are all tired.
Mathiang says the group, which includes musicians, painters, poets, actors, and activists coming from South Sudan and Kenya, met last week at Kenya's Lake Elementaita for a peace conference and created the song. Additionally, Mathiang says they created an action plan to be a force of change in society, since the song was only part of the long-term initiative. Mathiang says they can't push their message from outside South Sudan, so the artists have now returned to their home country to continue their campaign for peace. In 2013, President Salva Kiir fired his vice president, Riek Machar, amid coup accusations. Fighting broke out in Juba that December, setting off violence throughout the country and causing Machar to leave Juba. A peace agreement was signed in August 2015, but Machar did not return to Juba until April of this year. Then, last month, renewed fighting killed some 300 people in Juba, and Machar left again, prompting Kiir to appoint a new vice president. Many are hoping the current ceasefire will deter further conflict.
Our artists have personal experiences. Most of the artists that recorded this song were in Juba when this violence happened. And even one of us had his band members killed in this ongoing violence.
On Friday, the East African bloc IGAD released a communique urging deployment of a regional protection force and said that South Sudan agreed to the proposal. Such a force was one of Machar's demands, although Kiir has previously come out against having additional foreign troops in the country. The proposed protection force would complement the UN mission in South Sudan and report to its commander. Calling himself a raptivist, Lual Dawal is another musician who collaborated on the project. He refuses to share his tribal identity, saying he's a South Sudanese first and foremost.
We're not politically affiliated to anyone. We're just singing from the citizen's point of view about what is going on in South Sudan and what we need to change.
The artists say they will organize community dialogues, media campaigns, and work to involve the youth of South Sudan in ending the people's suffering. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again later for Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sali and his guests discuss Zambia's general election set for August 11th. The office of the president and seats in the National Assembly are being contested.
a constitutional referendum will be held with proposals to amend the nation's Bill of Rights. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.